William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. And I'm here with my good partner and co-host, Big John. John, how are you doing this evening?
I'm fine, William, but when you say you're a good partner and co-host, I'm wondering, who's your bad partner and your bad host?
Oh, well, if I was a multimillionaire, I'd probably, if I was Robert Kraft, I'd probably say my mistress, but I'm not. So I don't know. I said Robert Kraft because I just got through responding to somebody regarding this Daniel Snyder debacle. And,
right.
And Daniel Snyder does not deserve to own the Redskins. I said that from day one. I saw, you know, I was hot and heavy in the industry at that time, but you know, these owners really crack me up with their own hypocrisy. There's a Robert Kraft with this little wee willy getting a little, you know, and then trying to play the saintly. And then there's somebody we both know we bullied into taking a business name. So, I mean, none of them are any good, you know. Jerry Jones, I mean, they just had their vice president who just resigned maybe 6 months or a year ago. Nearly a $3 million settlement with cheerleaders because he was in the locker room and possibly videotaping him as they're changing. You know, so Snyder's not leaving this league because leftist idiotic reporters and race hustling fans want the team, want him gone. He's probably got a lot of dirt on these owners. And if Robert Kraft is seen as one of the saintly owners and his little wee willy's getting taken care of, then who knows what Jerry Jones has. It's all sexual. All these owners, there's that great meme, John, that shows this 80-year-old guy on the beach with a big old fat gut, beer belly, and a gorgeous blonde. And the caption reads, "This is why you want your daughters to get an education."
Right.
The irony is they're going to be taken care of for sleeping with the rickety old man. But my whole point is, when it comes down to it all, we men think one way. When you have that much power, that much money, you can get what you want. That's where I truly believe the professionals, when they go, sex is about power, not the actual sexual act itself. Mm. And that's where I think a lot of these men fall in terms of the owners, with the sexuality being out of control,
right.
They're thinking they can get away with it. You know, I'm watching Yellowstone right now with the wife. The wife asked me to watch it so we could watch it to get a show together. And it's about a family with power. It reminds me of Dallas with JR, you know?
Sure.
Okay, so anyway, I'm way off topic here. We got a great show lined up tonight. And, well, real quick, what's your take on your 30-second take on these owners and their shenanigans? Am I completely off, or what do you say?
Well, I don't know for sure what's going on there. I mean, I've had personal dealings with Robert Kraft. I don't care for Robert Kraft at all as a result of those business dealings.
And to the audience, John's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. If he doesn't care for someone, that bleep seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I just found him to be very dishonorable, let's put it like that, in my dealings with him. But, you know, you're probably right to some extent. You know, like that famous saying by Lord Acton, power corrupts absolutely, and a lot of power corrupts absolutely.
Power corrupts.
yeah. But the truth is, when you have that much money, that much power, not only does your ego grow, but the sycophants around you come around to take advantage of your power, to suck off
right.
some of your power as well. So I would tend to agree with you. I don't know about specifics other than the ones that have been made public, like Jerry Jones and his illegitimate daughter that he had for a while
that. That was an unfair shot at him because, I mean, he had been taking care of that girl. She
yes.
got greedy. But in the end, it's those sort of type details. And what people don't realize is Snyder was one of those internet phenoms when the internet first came on. Wild West made it big. But at the end of what I quickly realized is, like Cuban, right place, right time. You know, in life, there's a great book called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell that talks about all the many successful people in our history. It's not that they were so much better than their peers at the time. It's right place, right time. And I truly believe that with Snyder. And I don't think he should own the team, but I loathe even more when people who have no business try to dictate what somebody can do with their business. You know?
I agree. That's my position. Whether I like him or not personally, I hate even more the precedent of other owners getting together to take his team away from him. I find that abhorrent.
Exactly. And I think that's why I'm siding with him. Well, why? Yeah. You know, because he's a dirtbag. You read the reports, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah,
you know, but it's everything I thought. But let's get back to some football on the field. This weekend, we learned that the Colts lost to the Titans for the fifth out of six times, you know?
Yeah.
And Matt Ryan did not have a great game, and he got injured and was subsequently benched. And the issue is, who's at fault here? Is it Matt Ryan? Is it Chris Ballard? Is it Frank Reich? I'm like drawing a blank.
Yeah, yeah, Frank Reich, head coach.
You know, now nobody disagrees with Ballard and his ability to evaluate talent. He's got like over a dozen Pro Bowlers over the last few years. He's got a strong team. He's had some issues at defensive end. Obviously, he's had issues at wide receiver for years, going back to before. To heck, the last time they had great receivers was when Manning was there.
Yeah, and Harrison and Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark. Those were the heydays of the Colts.
Exactly. And since then, they've struggled. And this year, they're struggling at what is supposedly an elite strength of theirs, and that's the offensive line. And so we're going to discuss Matt Ryan and the benching along with Chris Ballard and Frank Reich. But we're also going to talk about Zion Williamson. The NBA season has started, and he has some film footage equivalent to his shoe blowing up when he was at Duke, you know. And we're going to end it with a few kind words to one of the funniest men. And when I say funny, John, I'm not talking comedy funny like Richard Pryor.
Right.
I'm talking more just an actor's guy. I mean, he was so unique in his physical being with his voice and the southern drawl and how short he was, and then combined with the outrageous roles he played and how he pulled him off. And that is, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank.
Leslie Jordan.
I know, I was thinking Leslie, but I'm thinking not Jordan. I'm thinking Michael Jordan. Leslie Jordan. He was the actor who you immediately recognized in whatever role you saw him, because he was such a unique person, but you never knew his name.
Exactly.
And we say goodbye to him. And for the audience, John was like, I had to look him up when you told me he passed away. You
know, but as soon as I saw his picture, I went, oh, I could think of like 10 things I saw him in. So, yeah, you're right. He is the classic character actor, someone whose face you know, someone who seems to be in every movie you ever liked, but you never know their name. So, classic character actor.
Right, and I was shocked at his death. I assume he died of from anything from COVID to heart attack to natural causes, you know. So I was a little surprised. And we'll say our goodbyes to him.
Okay.
We're hoping for a tight show tonight, people. We want to get you this information and get out without wasting your time, my time, Steve's time, Lisa's time, the whole world's time. How's that?
There you go.
Okay, so as I said, going back to Matt Ryan, general manager Chris Ballard has built teams. He's had some issues on the defensive front, as well as we talked about with wide receiver and recently the offensive line. But I think the one issue he's had the most problem, and this is any general manager, and this is why I think head coaches are overrated. Look at Andy Reid, could never win anything until he got Patrick Mahomes. Chuck Noll had Terry Bradshaw. You know, Tom Landry had Roger Staubach, and Frank Reich has had Andrew Luck on his way out the door, Jacoby Brissett, Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, and now Sam Ellinger or Ellinger? Which one is it?
I've pronounced it Ellinger this whole time, so I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out.
So in Frank Reich's few years in charge, he's had 6 quarterbacks. You know, with Ellinger being his 6th quarterback. Now, granted, he had Matt Ryan to start the season before going to the youngster. But the Colts sent the Atlanta Falcons a 3rd-round selection for their longtime quarterback this offseason. But before I get any deeper with what I want to talk about, John, what do you think about the fact from 2018 to 2022, current day today, he's going to be on his 6th quarterback? That's what, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 5 seasons and 6 quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, what it tells me is they've never invested in the future. Look, they were clearly devastated when Andrew Luck retired. Andrew Luck retired when he was 29, I think. He was still a young man. He was entering the prime of his career. He was their He was their Peyton Manning. He was their Tom Brady. And losing him devastated that franchise. And I think their opinion was every year since he retired, we're one quarterback away from the big game.
Right,
and I
right.
think that between ownership and general management, they really thought they were just a quarterback away. That's why you see this series of either game managers or old veterans who were cut by their former teams for a reason. All of a sudden, they end up on the Colts. So Jacoby Brissett, for example, was Luck's backup. So when they had him, you figure, okay, it's a transitional guy. But they didn't draft anybody.
Well, also, remember, John, though, Jacoby Brissett was one of those New England guys. Like,
yes.
You know, the backup coming in, like Zapp right now. Was it Zapp Bailey?
Bailey Zapp.
But
here's the thing. I agree with you, but my point is the things that's more concerning to me were the Philip, and at the time I said this, Philip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan this year. I was not a fan of any of those moves, giving up picks for these old vets. It's not like you signed them without giving up draft capital. It's one thing if you traded for Carson Wentz and drafted somebody in the second or third round you could develop.
Yeah, that's a bad example, though. I mean, a Rivers or Ryan is the better, or even Brissett. But Wentz himself is young, you know?
No, I understand. But Wentz was, I think, a project of Reich's just because he knew him in Philadelphia. And everybody figured that was the perfect marriage. That didn't last.
Well, that's because that's because Reich left, you know, and Wentz was kind of on his own a bit there. And the reason Wentz needed that development is people forget he's from like a small college himself.
He's not a big school quarterback when he came out. And no, I agree with you. I'm not saying like if you're going to take a chance on him though, you should have had somebody that you draft. And again, maybe not spend a first round pick, but somebody you drafted. That you brought along that you thought had potential, like somebody you're constantly evaluating. You know who's good at that? The Patriots. They're constantly even when Tom Brady was there, they were always taking somebody in the third round, you know, in the fourth round that they thought they could develop. And then what do? They trade them off to suckers. Jimmy Garoppolo, Matt Castle, Jacoby Brissett. All these guys come out of New England because people figure, oh, man, they've been in the system. They must know something. Some of them have had more success than others, probably – Jimmy Q has had the best. But the problem with the Colts, completely destroyed by the fact that Andrew Luck retired on them. And ever since then, they've been looking for that one quarterback, and they haven't been able to find him. They have not been able to find him.
So what you're saying is instead of giving up those late-round picks, maybe they should have drafted somebody in the hopes of they did, actually. Erlinger. He was the sixth-round draft pick.
Yeah, but that's a little too late. Like, I mean, look at this year's draft, for example. You had the Titans took Malik Willis to sit behind Tannehill, presumably for a season or two, because they liked his raw athleticism. Whether he works out or not, it's a plan. The Steelers took Kenny Pickett in the first round. You had other teams like the Panthers took somebody in the third round. The Desmond Ridder went to the Falcons, I think, in the fourth round. So
I got to be honest. I'm not seeing much love out of these first rounders the last 5 years, right? Whether it's Justin Fields, whether it's Baker Mayfield. Justin Fields played well this week against the Patriots and finally got unleashed a bit, so maybe there's hope for them. But I kind of look at those with a QB and RB, I kind of look at them similarly. You know, they're projects in terms of where you can find gems.
You're right, but I think the track record for quarterbacks is probably better in the first round. For example,
I don't argue that. But the point is the Colts were never in that type of position.
Right. You know? It was never guaranteed for them. I agree with you. That's why they should have stuck to those second and third round picks.
Exactly. Okay. So they sent a third round selection for Matt Ryan, and they made a significant financial commitment to him for 2 years. It's been 2 months. And Jim Irsay during the draft said that he could see extending that 3 to 4 years.
Yeah,
now, I've only glimpsed some of the Colts games, and I watched the film before going. And, you know, I don't see anything much different from Matt Ryan outside of the fact that he's not getting a lot of protection. He's being hurried a lot. And when you have a quarterback his age, I'm sorry. I guess what I'm trying to say is you put Tom Brady in that backfield, and he's doing no better than Matt Ryan is what I've seen this year. And I get the feeling that they're trying to make him a scapegoat and they're throwing him under the bus. Frank Reich is well respected. He's led the Colts to the playoffs in 2018 and 2020. I think he would be seen as an elite head coach if he had a QB. But I also think he can be seen as a moron with how he's handled the quarterback position the last 2 years. Now, a lot of critics say Jim Irsay keeps meddling, but that he's typically a hands-off. Well, if he's meddling, Reich's career is being ruined because of that meddling, in my opinion. So there comes a time a coach has to take a stand. You know, he's pretty good with quarterbacks. We saw what he did in Philadelphia, whether it was Foles or Wentz, you know, when Philly's heyday, when they won the Super Bowl, Andrew Luck returned for a really great year, his best season in 2018. And he also did, I had to go look this up because being a San Diego guy, I'm very aware about Phillip Rivers. And then I was reminded, I was like, oh yeah, he had a down year before going to Indianapolis. So he can be seen as a QB guru, but I think a combination of the politics, having to deal with the GM and the owner, he's not been able to do his job as head coach and make the final decision. What are your thoughts?
I'm sure you're right. Look, this could be the setup for a fire sale right now, right? They could be looking to unload Matt Ryan to someone at the trade deadline, which is November 1st or 4th Ooh. This year. Matt Ryan. I don't know where.
I know, but is there anybody out there who would take him?
No, of course not. But I think what they're doing is they're trying to figure out whether they're going to cut him at the end of the year. They're trying to see what they have in Ellinger. They're trying to figure it out. So I understand what they're doing. They're not going anywhere this year. Jonathan Taylor, by the way, as I predicted, not having the best of years because.
Well, hold on, John. They're only 3-3-1.
No, I understand, but
in the AFC South, traditionally the last 10 years, the weakest division. Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, but I know this is going to sound like if Bill Parcells heard me say this, he'd lose his mind, but they're not as good as their record.
I would agree, but they still have a shot.
Fair enough, but it's almost counterproductive because they need high draft picks to replenish that team. So it would be counterproductive if they somehow stumbled their way into a division win or the playoffs.
Let's backtrack. You said you predicted that Jonathan Taylor would not have a good season. Is he not having a good season based on what you thought, or are you like a lot of people didn't see the offensive line this bad?
It was based on other factors, but the offensive line breaks it. William, when I started writing and doing analysis, there was something I identified, and there was a method for identifying running backs who bust every year. And the main characteristic there is overuse. When they pass a certain amount of use, the following year they decline by 40 to 60% on average, and it never fails. It never fails. Out of something, I looked back 30 years, something like close to 100 running backs fell into that sort of identification. Of the 100, something like 6. Were only had equal or better seasons the following season. The other 94 went down the tubes significantly. Taylor fell into that group this year. And I told everyone, don't take him in your fantasy leagues in the first round. If you have the first overall pick, trade it to some sucker who will take Jonathan Taylor. You get the better picks. And it's happened. Now you'll say he was hurt. Yeah, that's part of the curse the following season. People get hurt.
You're right. I mean, the easier example I tell people is look at 2,000-yard rushers because people can look that up quick. Themselves, but it pertains to those high yardage. And when I say high yardage, I'm talking the combined yardage, rushing and receiving. And people just don't want to look at reality. I mean, I heard the same thing about the Titans, Derrick Henry, King Henry, and last year he sucked.
Yeah,
he was on pace to do this. No, he was up and down until he got hurt.
And he was another prediction that I had.
Exactly.
It just doesn't fail. People should pay attention to it. But anyway, when you take, I took into consideration that Jonathan Taylor was not going to have a good year. The offensive line was banged up. I didn't think it would be this bad, to be honest with you, but I thought it would be bad or worse than it was last year, even. And then when you look at their receiving core, I think Pittman was a good receiver. Alec Pierce, people thought, and he's done some things. I don't know where he stands, but he's a decent young receiver. But at tight end, they really don't have anybody of value, and I don't see depth in their receiving core. So when you put it all together, Matt Ryan was going from either a bad situation to a similar one when he got traded from the Falcons to the
I got to interrupt you right there.
To the Colts, or, you know, maybe worse. Yes,
you're spot on, Big John. You're spot on. The reason I stopped you is because the reason Ryan did go is because he was sold by Frank Wright that we have an elite, not a great offensive line, we have an elite offensive line. And he also sort of, we got a dominant running back in Jonathan Taylor. You don't have to carry the water here. But at the end of the day, he had neither. So it may as well have been back on a Falcons losing team. And Frank Wright, this is what I don't like about coaches. It's easy to say crap like this, but at the end of the day, you're still not being held accountable because you're still the coach.
Right.
You know, he says, we did not hold up to our end of the bargain here. We promised you one of the top NFL rushing games, and we promised you great protection, and we haven't really, as on offense, delivered on that. And then he goes on to talk about during the presser, that him, Chris Ballard, and the drunk owner, Irsay, had, I don't like Irsay. Yeah, Jim Irsay had a conversation. Yeah, no, he was a drunk. There's no alleged, a DUI, a drunk, a damn drunk. Yeah, for the audience, John's going to say, where's that alleged at?
Yeah, please help me out here, will you?
There's no alleged. He was found guilty.
All right.
But they had a long talk, and the scuttlebutt is that this is kind of Irsay pushing his decision again. How he pushed, he was the voice that pushed Wentz out. He's the voice to push Ryan out. And to me, there comes a point, as I said earlier, Frank Reich's got to grow a pair. And go, hey, I'm the head coach, not you. And if he gets fired, he'll actually probably gain greater respect around the league. And if he's that good, he'll work his magic and then land a better job. That's how I view the bigger picture here. But instead, he acquiesced. And you know, the offensive line, some analysts are actually saying, John, it's one of the worst in the league. In deference to you with Jonathan Taylor, the rushing attack ranks third from the bottom. Yeah. So Wright did not say it was Irsay's decision, but he kind of did allude to that a little bit. And in their defense, so Ryan has been inconsistent. He has been fumbling. He was throwing interceptions. And at the end of the day, each week, they probably kept thinking, who else do we got here? But I'm a firm believer a good chunk of the negatives on Ryan is a product of a bad team around them. So they are 3-3-1. He suffered a grade 2 shoulder separation, and that's the excuse they used early on, but they came out later and saying this replacement is for the rest of the season. And I got to tell you, Ryan's thrown 2,008 yards, 9 touchdowns, league-leading 9 interceptions. However, he has been sacked, people, 24 times. That's tied for the most in the NFL. 80 hits. That's most in the league. Now, people, let me tell you something. When you're 24, when you're 22 through 28, those hits don't last as long as when you're 37.
Exactly.
80 hits, most in the league, 110 pressures. You know, he's only averaging 5.9 yards per throw. That's the worst out of any starter. And Wright came out and said, because of all that this decision would have been made regardless of his injury. And I don't blame Wright for that, but I'm not going to blame it when Wright is fired at the end of the season for having two subpar seasons before this in terms of high expectations. And again, high expectations. Here's the kicker, though, Big John. You're looking at a $12 million of his $29 million he's due in 2023 is guaranteed. There's the $7.5 million roster bonus by March 17th. And if the Colts were to cut him, you're looking at $18 million against the salary cap. So this is a devastating situation for them, both short-term and long-term. I just threw out a lot of information. But break it down. At the end of the day, who is this on in the perspective of making a decision, and do you agree with it? And two, who's truly at fault? And what I'm asking you, Big John, is Matt Ryan's play a product of his age and regressing, or is it just a product of being on a team that's no better than the team he left?
Yeah, I think it's the main culprit is Ballard. He's the GM. He's the one who made the trade. He's the one who evaluated Ryan. He's the one who got him over there. At the end of the day, it's his fault. Frank Reich is a coach. At the end of the day, he works with whatever pieces he's given by the GM. So I don't blame Reich as much. Maybe you can quibble with his handling of the situation. Maybe he could have stood up. Maybe he could have been from – that, to me, is not the issue here. Ryan, look, there's a reason the Falcons got rid of him, okay? They understood that he was at the end of his career. And rather than drag it on, they decided to rip the Band-Aid off.
But that's because they were losing anyway, right?
Exactly. It's not like the Colts were winning. You know what I mean? Last year, like, they missed the playoffs because they lost to the Jaguars on the last in the last game of the season. Okay, and the Jaguars were a nothing happening team last year. So when you look at all that, it's not like it's not like they were one quarterback away. And if they were, Matt Ryan wasn't that quarterback. So whose fault is it? Ballard's. That's my opinion. It's Ballard's fault. He's the one who started this mess. He did it last year. He did it the year before because he's not getting the correct solution for a quarterback. In today's NFL, given the salary cap, given the restrictions, the way you build a Super Bowl winner is with a quarterback that you draft.
Well, you know, John, I mean, real quick, I'm not pushing back. I'm actually asking.
Yeah.
Playoffs 2018, playoffs 2020. They missed the playoffs by one game in 2021. I mean, they've never been in Atlanta Falcons. This is the first year they've looked this bad since Frank Reich has taken over. So to me, it's not like – to me, they were literally a couple of pieces away, quarterback being one of them after Andrew Luck. And the reason I say that is I think they were looking for a game manager, you know, build a complete team, had the QB be the game manager, and obviously that has not worked out at all. So I guess I look at it from the perspective – you gambled, you threw those dice, and they came up snake eyes. Not once, not twice, but three times, you know.
Well, that's my point. That's my point. They did it three times, William. You're absolutely right. You do it once, and you say, okay, we took our shot with Philip Rivers. See, Philip Rivers, to me, was their best shot with that one, we got our guy, and he's built for one last run. He was it.
Right, exactly.
And that was the Cinderella story, to be honest with you, because he had never been to the Super Bowl, and he had – don't forget, he got drafted with Manning and Roethlisberger, and those two guys have rings.
Yeah.
Rivers doesn't, right? So, and arguably, Rivers was probably maybe the best out of those three overall, right? So anyway, the point was Rivers was their shot. When Rivers decided to retire after one season, that's when they should have gone back and said, we're building this team up because we have a window to still retain a lot of the – and they didn't do it. That's on Ballard. Maybe Irsay, if Irsay told him to keep chasing these one-year wonders, right?
You know, I can't argue that, John. I think when Andrew Luck retired, they look at Jacoby Brissett. He's a game manager. And they did pretty good. They didn't do terribly. But they realized he's not the game manager we win. They have Phil Rivers. And then we're going to get some youth. We got Frank Reich's old project who's done pretty well at times in Carson Wentz. Well, Irsay didn't like Wentz, and from what I understand, it could be locker room issues. Maybe Wentz is just not a good
team. Nobody liked Wentz.
So I think that mentality was still there. You know, let's go with Matt Ryan, and I think they've finally given up on that. So I tell you what, tell us a little bit about Sam Ehlinger.
Listen, to be honest with you, I don't think he's going to make it. He's a sixth-round pick, has played sparingly. Look, he may have some physical tools. Maybe he'll run around a lot. Be mobile, which he'll need this year because he'll run for his life behind that offensive line. And listen, part of this is going to be the evaluation process. I'd be lying to you if I told you I could predict what kind of career he's going to have, what kind of season he's going to have. I'd be talking out of the side of my mouth. Let's see what he's got. That's what the Colts are doing. And in that sense, they're smart. Is he your backup quarterback for the next 10 years? Is he sort of like Daniel Jones? You give him the right coaching, and maybe he blossoms this year, right? Now that you're giving him your full attention instead of part-time reps in practice. So there's a lot of that going on. I think it's a smart move. If you're moving on from Ryan, you might as well put the kid in, see what he's got, see what you have on your roster. You may decide after he plays these last 10 games, as an organization, you may decide he's our backup quarterback. We still need to go out and get our franchise guy.
You know, John, before I ask you for your fantasy take and we move on, I will say this about him. He was a stud in high school. He was pursued by many universities. He played exceptionally well at Texas. And in the grand scheme of things, he was only worthy of a sixth-round pick. Now, I'm not going to compare him to Tom Brady, but I will compare him to a whole swath of outside the first and second-round quarterbacks that have gone. And people, y'all can look him up. There's been a lot of success there. The reason Frank Reich says he has a special sauce to him, you know, he brings something to the table. I look at his pedigree, what he's accomplished, and in a perfect world, the last year or so as a backup have been more helpful than hurtful. In other words, being thrown to the wolves. I mean, look at Pete Willis. He just looks horrific. Not once or twice, but every single time he's been out there, coming from a small school, having to learn a professional playbook, dealing with the speed of the NFL. He didn't even deal with the fastest speed in college going to a small school. So I think that this is the best situation for Sam Ellinger to want to be in. And I'm actually anxious to see what turns up, because I think statistically you're right. Likely backup based on where he was drafted, the fact we haven't seen him, the fact he's a nobody. But there's been more than once where magic has come out of rounds 3 through 6, you know. So what's your fantasy analyst, or as a fantasy analyst, what should fantasy owners look at here in terms of, is there even anything to look at here?
No.
There you have it, people.
Like, to be honest with you, I didn't see much in Matt Ryan. I thought if you were down to having Matt Ryan on your team for any reason, you're probably not in competition in your league. Or your league has, you know, it's a 20-team league or something.
All right.
You know what I mean? So Ellinger, I wouldn't waste a roster spot on him. Give him a game or two. If he turns out rushing 80 yards a game because he's running for his life, maybe you pick him up as a streaming quarterback at that point. But
right. You know where you pick him up, John? Is I used to play in one league. It was like 22 or 24 players. It was a dynasty league. I grab him now. Just stuff him somewhere.
Yeah, if you have a
outside of that, that's it.
Yeah, you're right. In the dynasty league, you might stash him, see if he works out for the rest of the season. But in a redraft league or a DFS league, nah.
All right, people. Let's move on. We spent a lot of time there, and the reason we spent a lot of time is what I've been saying about Frank Reich is becoming true. I'm good, people. I'm freaking good. Let's move on to Zion Williamson of the New Orleans Pelicans. Who the hell would name a team the Pelicans?
I don't know.
They're just ugly, crugly birds. They're pretty.
Awful name.
Yeah, but the discussion here is going to be injury prone. Now, Zion Williamson has a combination of size and speed.
And fat.
Well, man, he can get fat. He can get fat. But when he came out and in college, it was his size and speed. He was a man child.
Yes,
so he was able to dominate. And he's been injured a lot. And part of the reason, I think, is he's a man child. He literally has a man's exterior with the interior that's still trying to grow to fill that frame out, and he's playing like a man amongst boys. And I think that's one reason why he was prone to injury early on. But the reason we're talking about him, and Big John will fill us in, is what happened to him coming back after a set of injuries that sidelined him last year?
Right. So this season, for those that don't know, we're most teams are getting through their third or fourth games in the NBA season. They just started. So Williamson, who had missed all of last season due to a foot injury, comes back this season. He's on a breakaway against the Jazz. There's nobody in front of him, clear sailing. He decides he's going to try a windmill dunk. So as he's got the ball and he's reaching back to give it that extra oomph on the hammer there, William, the guard for the Jazz, who was trailing the play, reaches up and by the way, completely legal play. He got all ball. He didn't it wasn't a personal foul. It wasn't a flagrant or anything like that. He got all ball. But because Williamson was already airborne, he basically got him to, by hitting the ball, he got him horizontal and he fell flat on his butt.
Right, because Williams was at about a 45-degree angle. What he did with the ball. He hit the ball and he reached back like this to dunk it.
Right.
So when the guy hit the ball there, I mean, it's that's just physics, you know, or gravity, whatever you want to call it. He could have just tapped it, but with the way he was angled, he hit hard.
He
didn't look like a hit that injured until you saw that grin in his face.
Well, it's also the official labeling of the injury, and you got to love this. You got to love doctors and PR guys. A posterior hip contusion. You know what that means? He fell on his ass. That's what that means. It's a nice way of saying that, William. But look, it doesn't
make sense. I like it, though. Posterior hip contusion.
Yeah. So, and it means he got a cut on his butt. But anyway. So,
crack.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the thing with Zion. There are some people who get hurt regardless, either because of dumb luck, either because they're too aggressive in their sport, or they don't take care of themselves. There's a lot of reasons why someone could be injury prone. The kind of injury prone that gets resulted, William, from trying too hard, like especially say in a contact sport like hockey or football, there's guys who get hurt all the time because they're constantly throwing their bodies into the middle of a pile, right?
That's a running back
is a perfect example, right? Look at Saquon Barkley for the Giants. This is his first healthy season since his rookie year, and he's tearing it up. Two seasons in between, not so much. And nobody accuses him of being soft, fat, flabby, not working out. The guy's like a chiseled statue.
Right, he's an Adonis. I mean, he literally is an Adonis.
Right? Yep. So with him, it's his exuberance and it's dumb luck. Zion Williamson, I haven't figured out yet because he's only 22, William, and he's missed 65% of eligible games that he could play in. Think about that. He got drafted number one overall. So he wasn't just a first-round pick.
Real quick, the number one pick. For the audience, he is 6'6" and 285 pounds. Yeah. He's a big man. Yeah. And, John, to answer your question, I think I already did. I think you're talking a man-child's physical body. Yeah. And the bones aren't there to support it, in my opinion. I talk about this a lot with football, the NFL, and I just find it shocking that I don't hear other doctors. When I was running my company, I was fascinated by the injuries, and I talked to multiple doctors, and they all told me that internally the human body doesn't stop growing until about the approximately the late 20s.
Yeah.
This kid's 22. He just signed a big contract, John, $231 million. I mean, $231 million, that's money that it's guaranteed. And in any other business, he would never have been signed. But in the business of professional sports, that's not chump change, but they're going to make their money back, they know, those TV contracts.
Yeah.
So they view the risk as well worth it. But at the end of the day, I think he's been hurt in high school, suffered a fall during warmups, which forced him to miss more than a few months of action for the AAU at Duke. You know, they blame it on the shoe blowing up. I think when he hit the ground, his foot hit the ground, his foot stayed in the shoe. The rest of him, you know, just kind of slipped and he tore his shoe. And that caused a knee injury. In 2018, he missed, backtracking for Duke. In 2018, he also missed the Nike Hoop Summit as well as the Jordan Brand Classic. As I mentioned, at Duke, he had the injury. He was only at Duke one season, one big injury, you know. In the summer league in the NBA, a few minutes into his summer league debut, he bruised his knee, which forced him to miss the remainder of the action. 2019, right knee soreness before the season. Missed the summer league now, right before the season, and he missed his time. And as you said last year, everything from a thumb sprain to ankle sore, I mean, everything. Again, I firmly believe at 22, he's just not fully developed. My problem is he's not going to be fully developed for another 6 years. You know, he may be out of the league with debilitating injuries. Because these injuries, you know, once you get a fracture, once you get broken up, once you get injured, you're susceptible to injury more at that same spot because it never comes back to a pure 100%. Some do muscle soreness or this or that, but some of these injuries he's had, they're going to take their damage. What are your thoughts, John? Do you think he'll make it to full maturity before he's out of the league?
No. He's one of these guys. He's just – you know who I – in some ways, he's like Christian McCaffrey in the NFL. Super talented.
He had super talented seasons.
Yeah, super, super productive back, probably the top overall back in the NFL. You can't count on him. You can never count on him. In your fantasy league, think about that. You draft him number one overall, the guy misses half the season or he's out for the year or he's got a bad knee or whatever. So I prefer guys who are consistent, who are dependable, even if they're not top of the line. The problem with someone like Zion, though, you mentioned it, he is so damn talented. He has so much damn potential that you look past all the warning signs. For me, right, when you see a kid at 22 who's constantly hurt, it's not going to get any better with age, William. I mean, I get your point about his body developing and all that. I get that. But there's other 22-year-olds in the NBA. There's other 21-year-olds in the NBA whose bodies are also developing.
You can't go down that road. He is very unique. There is no 22-year-old in the league likely as big or as talented as him. And I'm telling you, John, it's that size, because – those players in today's world, you don't get over the hill in basketball until right about 30 is when you start to peak, 28, 29, 30.
No, I get you. But what I'm saying is, it's not that – like, look, when you look at someone like a Barkley when he came in, he was like this roly-poly big guy, undersized but big, you know what I mean, short but big.
Right.
And he was like tenacious. I don't ever remember Barkley being hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was a chubby guy, but he was nowhere near as big.
I see what you're saying. And like I conceded, the guy is a magnificent talent, which is why they're putting up with all this nonsense. But my point is, as he gets older, the injuries don't get easier. They get easier and easier to occur. So if they're happening at this rate now, odds are when he hits 26, 27, 28, he's going to be getting more injuries, not fewer. You don't grow out of those things.
Here's my prediction. My prediction is if he doesn't suffer a major injury, he'll get better over the years, and right around 26, we're going to start to see him come into his own. And if that happens, dear God, what will that contract be then? But you can't argue your logic. I get it. I guess the issue I have is it's easier for him to get re-injured at those spots, but he's still young and growing, so he's still gaining strength and vitality. So it's not like he's 30 already. If he can make it the next 4 years with minimal injuries, I think he still has the ability to be a superstar. I kind of view him as Bill Walton, that forgotten player with all the talent, yep, who was a nobody after he came out of college and kind of tanked, bombed, but then he got to Boston a little bit rejuvenated, you know, was a full grown man internally and externally. Maybe not the best comparison, because the talent level is, there is no comparison when you compare Zion to Bill Walton.
Honestly, what I would do is if Zion manages to keep healthy for half a season, I'd trade him off for a treasure if possible.
No,
I get rid of him now and like get it. I mean, I'm not a capologist for the NBA. We'd have to get Dennis Velasco, our buddy here, to explain it.
Yeah,
but like,
they have soft caps. They don't care about caps. In fact, that league is so crooked. They allow the Lakers to steal Shaq, and they didn't care about caps. But they all worked that out. So
yeah.
I get your point. Their cap is nothing like a football cap.
Fair enough.
To back up your point, in his first three seasons with the Pelicans, he's only played in 85 games due to injuries. Three seasons.
He's played 85 games out of 240.
So nearly 300 or 250 games. So
that's a third.
On the positive, they, because the guy does have a tendency to love his pizza, love his whatever he eats. He loves it, the Cajun food down in New Orleans. But they do have in his contract that his combined weight and body fat cannot exceed 295, which I don't understand. Combined body fat and weight. Weight's one thing. That's your body, you know?
Yeah, they're trying to get to a combined number, so he.
But there is no combined number. I see what you're saying. They want the body fat to be within this frame, the weight to be within that frame.
Yeah, so if
that,
he weighs,
that's probably how it's structured.
Right. So if he weighs 280, they're saying his body fat can't be more than 15%.
Exactly.
That's what they're trying to get to.
Exactly. So, and if you own Zion in fantasy, after he comes back and has a couple of good games, trade him, because John's right in that sense.
Get rid of him.
All right. Let's talk about a little funny man. And I say a little funny man with a chuckle. Leslie Jordan. He died this week. He just died. Just passed away. Today, I want to say. Is it today that he passed away?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Okay. He crashed his car into a tree while driving in Hollywood. He was 67. He was pronounced dead at the scene. And some people are saying, or some of his friends are saying, he may have had a medical issue when he crashed. The cops or the firemen found him pulseless and non-breathing. So he may have been dead by the time he got there. And that's just the ugly facts of him leaving us. Because when I look at somebody like Leslie Jordan, I'm thinking old days, like I said earlier. Yeah. So, John, you would agree he's an actor you knew but didn't know his name.
Yeah. He's always someone new. He was on Will and Grace. He was on another show that TV show that Burt Reynolds was on called Evening Shade, I believe.
He was on Evening Shade?
I think he was.
I want to say you're right. Yeah.
I think he was. I'm not 100% sure, but he's that type of character. Like he's, and you know what was amazing to me in this whole story, William? When he passed away, he was 67. I would have bet money that he was in his late 70s, early 80s.
I was thinking the same thing, brother. You know,
he seemed very young. I mean, he looked older than he was. Like 67 to me, for the way he appeared, and you don't know if that was makeup or a certain way he kept himself to put forth his character work, but yeah, he was a young man at 67.
Yeah, you know, John, I just looked it up. I don't see anything on Evening Shade, but I want to sit there and semi-agree with you. And for the folks out there, John and I, that was the era we were probably still in high school when Evening Shade came out with Burt Reynolds. That was Burt Reynolds went from super mega movie star to
TV star.
TV to keep making money. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Leslie Jordan, I agree with you. I thought he was much older. And it's funny because I – had been on television, and you've been on television and worked in that industry specifically, but makeup can work wonders.
Yes.
And the reason I say that is they can make anybody look really young. So the fact that we assume Leslie Jordan was much older says a lot about how he probably looked physically up close. Yes. He was born April 29, 1955. He grew up to challenge Robert Reich. He was 4'11".
Yeah, he was a little guy. Yeah.
They don't mention Evening Shade, but they do mention Murphy Brown, mm-hmm. Star Trek Voyage, American Horror Story. So he was in some pretty big shows as a supporting character. But what really got him to fame was Will and Grace. He played this character called Beverly Leslie. And I do remember, I used to watch Will and Grace, the first incarnation before it came back and it was completely woke and stupid and ignorant, you know. And the reason I watch is my wife's a hairdresser. So we knew, and a lot of our friends were gay. So it was always fun to experience a little bit of that world, even through a TV show. Because back then the jokes were actually sincere in the sense there was a history, meaning somebody who was gay could say, oh, yeah, that's true, this or that or whatever, you know. Apologies, people. My coffee.
Oh, you just knocked over your coffee cup?
Thank goodness it was empty. But he was great on there. I remember him in one scene with the sparkly shorts and the cowboy western hat. I mean, and for people who don't know, he was gay. And every role he played was kind of like whether the role was gay or not, you just assume his character was gay. But he did it in a lovable a charming teddy bear way, and you couldn't help but like it. Am I wrong with what you take?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I didn't know that he was gay in real life, to be honest with you. It doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know that for a fact. But all his characters definitely were effeminate, and he had that high-pitched voice and that little bit of a southern twang when he would talk, and he would always say good morning, you know, and he always have, you know, He had that affect of the stereotypical gay voice, if such a thing exists.
But let me ask you, every time you heard him or saw him come into a scene, you would smile.
Yeah, no. And that's why I almost refused to believe he was 67.
Yeah.
Like, because I think if you told me, if and this Will and Grace thing that he won the Emmy for might have been like, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Back then, if you had asked me, I would have said he looked 67 back then.
You know, John, actually, that's what I mean by makeup. So he has kept the same look and build. And what people don't understand, because I'm getting older and I've actually kept my looks versus a lot of my friends, is you actually kind of keep your looks, but most people change as they get heavier. he had the same look. That's why he looked the same in Will and Grace, and then he looked in the same in this show that his last major main role was a show called Cool Kids, and that's the magic of makeup, because if you got up to him closer, you would see his age of being 67, but maybe looking older. But that's because he kept the same build and same stature, makeup was able to hide a lot of it. And real quick, his last main role, he did not have a lot of main roles in life.
Right.
He was always a supporting actor. But I was always a Carol Burnett fan. I like David Alan Greer. And obviously, I love Leslie Jordan. So when I saw the previews to this show, I'm like, I got to check it out. And I tried to love it. I tried to like it. The characters were great. It was just not a bit. There's a lot of bad TV being written right now. That's why shows get canceled so quickly. You got a lot of the concepts are great. The writing is crap. And that's what the writing was with Cool Kids. But what they played David Alan Greer. And, oh, my gosh, I said
Martin Mull. Martin Mull.
Martin Mull, that's who I was thinking.
The late, great Martin Mull. And exactly. Also, you mentioned Carol Burnett. It wasn't David Alan Greer that was on Carol Burnett. It was Vicki Lawrence, and that's who you were thinking.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant, Vicki Lawrence, but David Alan Greer was on the show. Yes. Also, Cool Kids.
Yeah.
And they played, so David Alan Greer, Leslie Jordan, Martin Mull. They were all these retirees. And their big dog had died, their pack leader or so ever. You know, of course, their retirement home, it's an eventuality. And then came Vicki into the picture, and that was the whole premise of the show, the woman coming out of the scene. And it was cute, you know. And you know, Leslie Jordan hadn't told his kid he was gay, you know, because he was married, you know, lived that life. And people back then, that was not uncommon. A lot of gay men would marry, have kids, living the lie. But either way, he was a great actor. I will miss him. And before I get your final comment on him, he really came out in terms of popularity during the pandemic. He gained nearly 4 million followers inside of a month by just coming out very cheery on Instagram. So when he died, he had nearly 6 million. And he actually parlayed that to do a gospel album. And the reason I bring this up, because my issue with the church, my issue with the fundamentalists are – you're relying on a book saying that's the word of God. I'm not going to fight you or argue with that. But my belief is spirituality. It doesn't matter who we are as humans. It's how we carry ourselves in life that will be judged. So the fact that I saw him when I read that, I kind of brought a smile to me, because I'm like, you can be gay and still have a relationship with God, regardless of what fundamentalists say. And how much you want to bet if I run for office, somebody's going to find this little clip, you know, and primary me. But, So God bless him. He also published a book. I won't get into titles and whatnot, but he lived the American dream. 4'11", not a handsome man, did not come from riches, and he lived the American dream. He's somebody we can all look up to, we can admire, and we can smile as he begins his next journey. What's your final words on Mr. Leslie Jordan?
I got nothing to add, William. You did it perfectly. I think you described his life and his career just perfectly. Again, character actors usually don't get much love, because most of the time you don't even know what their name is. And like you said, William wasn't joking, folks. When I went through the bullet points for tonight's show, I said, at first I thought you said Leslie, I thought you meant Leslie Jones, that actress from
the black actress from
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
There's
the Ghostbusters woman. I'm thinking of Grace.
Yeah. Who's absolutely unwatchable. She's a horrible comedian. She just screams a lot. I have no love for her at all. So I thought you meant her for some reason. I guess the names were close enough. But then when I actually Googled it and I said, oh, okay, I remember that guy. And then it occurred to me. And then I started reading up and found out his age and everything. So, R.I.P. He led a good life. So at the end of the day, he shouldn't complain. If he's got any sort of consciousness right now, he shouldn't be complaining. He had a good life. He accomplished a lot, and it seems like he had a fruitful life as well. So R.I.P. Leslie Jordan.
You know, we're losing so many loved ones, and it's easy to track because of the internet versus the old days when TV Guide was our show reference or People magazine. Right. And I don't want to say we're losing too many people, but it's it just shows how we are here for a brief moment in time.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they're this generation. You ask them who Robert Redford, or not Robert Redford, Paul Newman is. Solid guy. Does he have a dressing or something? And that's about it. So enjoy your 15 minutes of fame. Some of us, or not some of us, some people have it longer than others. But at the end of the day, just enjoy looking in the mirror and hoping that you can look at the good Lord and go, I did not do anything wrong to send me downstairs, buddy. And with that, everybody, you have been listening to Points on the Board. Before I let you go, you can find this podcast at sportsgrumblings.com, on Rumble, on YouTube. And as John will tell you, our podcast can be found where, John?
On all the great podcasting platforms, Apple, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all of them, anything you could think of.
Yeah, except, but don't forget, check out sportsgrumblings.com. Not only do we have this podcast, we have the Big Questions with Big John, where he does a lot of interviewing, and it's John just got a comment off an interview 4 months ago. I mean, so his interviews are captivating. I've got the Fired Up, the political podcast. And I've already got two shows lined up this week, John. I have no choice, regardless of time or not. I mean, I love doing them, but election season's coming up.
That's right.
So I've been helping down with Ms. Roseberry on some planning. But we also have, I think that's about it. Yeah, those three podcasts, you can catch them at our site. We also have the Roundup, a daily article that comes out. And John has just released this week's The Way I See It. So, John, until next time, and everybody else, sportsgrumblings.com. Good night.
Good night.